You're listening to the Youth Crick Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at WUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at WUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
Everyone's already inside. Bye, Dad.
An explosion rocks the city today.
20,000 pounds for the names of the bombers. That's not how we do things here.
Hello?
Mr. Hennessy, he's here again.
That's 5 days in a row now. What does he want?
His daughter was killed in the bombing.
Mr. Hennessy, please find out the names of the bombers.
I work for the government, not terrorists.
You used to work for them.
I don't know who the bombers are.
I don't believe in you.
It's him.
You would tell me the names of the bombers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kel Smith. Joining me today is Patrick Campbell from Real Film Chatter.
Hello, everyone. I'm currently in Los Angeles traffic, so you know that means it's a great time to podcast. I am very excited to be here. Thank you, Kale, for having me. Let's talk Jackie Chan movies and Noah Baumbach.
Yes. Well, some of my favorite topics.
Mine
too.
It's
going to be an awesome show. So that's, as Patrick stated, we are going to be talking about the new Jackie Chan movie, The Foreigner, from director Martin Campbell, and then we're going to be talking about Noah Baumbach's new movie, The Meyerowitz Stories.
New and selected.
The Meyerowitz Stories, new and selected.
I just thought my addition made it that much better. New and selected.
It did. It did. But yes. So starting off first, we're going to be talking about The Foreigner. So Patrick, what did you think about Jackie Chan's?
So I thought that here's what I liked. I liked Jackie Chan a lot, and I liked Pierce Brosnan a lot. And I think that the movie is actually very good. I don't think it's great. I think it could have been better. But by being a film that wanted to be Jackie Chan's version of a Liam Neeson actioner now, where Liam Neeson has kind of taken the, you know, mantle of old guy goes after bad people because family, has done very well for himself. And I think that Chan is actually really quite good in the film. But what I think is a little bit misleading is that this marketing campaign is all about the fact that it's supposed to be a Jackie Chan movie. And he is not in this movie nearly as much as Pierce Brosnan is. And it's really more of a Pierce Brosnan movie because this is really more of a 90s political thriller, which is a very interesting way to take the story. And Jackie Chan is more like the shark from Jaws in the movie, where he pops up, wrecks shit, and disappears. Then the story continues, and then he pops up and wrecks shit again, and then he disappears again. And it works. But people expecting this to be like the Martin Campbell who did like Mask of Zorro and Casino Royale, where it's very heavy on action, might be a little disappointed, because this is a more contained version of Martin Campbell, closer to like the Edge of Darkness version. A film that it actually feels very similar to is Edge of Darkness. And Edge of Darkness, of course, was Mel Gibson doing the Liam Neeson thing. And that was during his trial as of a trying to come back. And I think Campbell got great performances out of both Chan and Brosnan, who he's reuniting with 20 years after Goldeneye, which is pretty fantastic. And it's a good movie. The action is good when it's there. The plot is interesting. It meanders a little too much, and sometimes it gets a little convoluted for its own good, but I like the movie. I thought it was fun. It was really just great to see Jackie Chan on the big screen again, because unless you're living in cities like L.A. and New York, most of his Hong Kong films that he still does, you can't see him on the big screen. You know, most of them are VOD or straight to Blu-ray releases now. So it was just cool to actually see him in an action film again, and not just an action film, but he's very, very serious about wanting to be taken as a serious actor in the vein of Robert De Niro, something he's actually said in countless interviews. And I think he did a nice balance here.
Yeah, and my thoughts are the same. It's like, and when I walked out of the movie, I was like, should I recommend, like, how should I recommend to people? Because I still want people to check this out. But it's like, right, the marketing campaign is kind of lying to people, you know, and by saying like, this is like, it's almost like old man Jackie Chan, like old man Logan, but Jackie Chan.
Yes.
Like, it's Jackie Chan and his serious performance. And it's like his Logan. It's like, not really. I mean, it's more Pierce Brosnan's movie. I mean, really one rewrite and you could probably cut Jackie Chan out of the whole movie.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I mean. Like, this is clearly a Pierce Brosnan film, which is so interesting to me. And if you really want to see Jackie really do something very dramatic, because this isn't the first time he's done it, but there's a film he did a few years ago called Shinjitsu Incident, which is a very heavy drama, and he's actually very good in it. It was a Hong Kong release. It's a good movie. I highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. I have not seen that, but I'll trust Patrick on that.
I'm the resident Jackie Chan guy. I own all of his movies. I import all of them. I've been watching his movies since I could walk. So he's something special to me. And so that's, again, like, that was part of the reason I was so excited to see this, was I really wanted to see Jackie Chan back on the big screen because it had been a long time. And I mean, the last time I saw him on the big screen was, you know what, Rush Hour 3? Years ago?
Karate Kid.
Okay, yeah, Karate Kid. And he's great in that movie. He's great in Karate Kid. I mean, say what you will about the movie itself. I know a lot of people don't like it, and some people do. I thought he was great in it, so.
Compelling performance. It's like, I mean, you feel his pain, you feel his sorrow, and I mean, he's giving his 100%. But the thing about this movie, as I said before, you really could rewrite his whole character, because it's not, because it's Pierce Brosnan's story. It's the story of this character who tried to kind of get, you know, do some political maneuvering, albeit via terrorism, but still he's trying to, you know, do this political maneuvering to get these pardons, and it kind of blows up in his face, and now he's trying to keep it all control before anyone spots him. And really everything just kind of happens without Jackie Chan anyway. Like, you're right. He's kind of, well, I'll give Jaws this, at least the shark is the catalyst of the story. Really, Jackie Chan's not even the catalyst of this movie anyway, when you think about it. Like, he's the catalyst for us, the audience, for us to go on the journey, but we kind of go away from him the first act so we can focus more on Brosnan's story, and it's a more interesting story. Like, I was very much interested in all of this, you know, in kind of his character and his, like, political maneuvering and trying to, like, keep everything intact despite Chan's advances. So I was very much into, you know, Brosnan's story more than anything that was happening with Chan.
It's funny because I'm a big Tom Clancy fan also. I think we've kind of talked about this between separate podcasts before. And it kind of reminded me of Patriot Games, because Patriot Games has a heavy IRA tint and push. And so it was kind of funny to see a movie, you know, almost 20 years later after Patriot Games, to have that IRA bent, because we don't talk about the IRA very much anymore. And so that was kind of fun, actually, in a weird way, to have this, like, the IRA is the bad guys. And I thought that was really interesting. And it takes...
I know, it's a different terrorist group. It's a different terrorist group to talk about.
Right, and I mean, it's only going to be a matter of time, for better or worse, that Russians are going to be bad guys in films again and stuff like that. So to have the IRA really focused was really a lot of fun. And so I think that there's also the unnecessary twist on who's giving the information to the rogue IRA group. That's part of where it gets a little too convoluted for its own good. But I liked what they did. I think this is a solid movie. And like I said, I mean, if you saw Edge of Darkness, you know that Martin Campbell is very capable of doing very much methodical, thoughtful thrillers. And this is much more along those lines, because there are those bursts of action. It's just not as much as I think people are expecting because of the trailers.
Yeah, I think that's the thing we have to kind of let people know, is that this is a really solid film, but don't go in thinking you're going to basically taken with Jackie Chan or The Equalizer right. with Jackie Chan. Be expecting a much more colder, more darker, more dramatic political thriller.
It's certainly closer to Equalizer than it is Taken as well, because Equalizer takes its sweet time to actually get to the action. When it does, there is action, but it takes its time to get there.
Fair. But the whole point of the Equalizer is that it's much more, it's a Denzel Washington vehicle, like Liam Neeson's Taken is. So.
Oh, no. I agree with you with that. I just mean tone and tone-wise and things like that. It's closer to the Equalizer. Because I could see someone sitting down to watch the Equalizer, the Foreigner, and Edge of Darkness as one sitting in a way, because they all have very similar feels and they're very tonally similar. And so that's more what I mean than anything.
Awesome. Great. I need to rewatch The Equalizer. I haven't seen it since I got an early screening of it back in 3 years.
That's the fact that it's been so long and now we're waiting for the sequel to come out next summer is so interesting to me. And I think, is it going right now? I think it is, because I don't think I know anything else at the moment. I think that's what he's filming right now, right?
I want to say IMDb or another source confirmed that it was filming.
Yeah, even though there's not much going on.
Even though the IMDb roster is kind of next to nothing.
Maybe that's better. I mean, I would love to actually just be surprised when it comes out and be like, look at that cast. It'll never happen. Not in this day and age. It just doesn't happen unless you're a found footage movie.
Yeah, or if you're like a Bad Robot production. Like, I still think Abrams is keeping everything close to the chest on his next, couple Cloverfield movies that he has coming out.
Well, it's funny, fun fact that the third one is actually test screening right now, because it's where there's a lot of buzz around it in Los Angeles.
Nice. Is there any word on what the genre is, or is that just it?
As far as I can tell, that it's that heavy science. It is God particle. As far as I can tell, it is God particle. So it's that heavy science fiction one with David Oyelowo and, Gugu Mbatha-Braw. I totally butchered your name, and I feel like an idiot.
That's better than what I would have done.
Right. So it is, I'm going to guess, more like what they did with 10 Cloverfield Lane, where they have gone back after and figured out clever ways to tie it into the Cloverfield universe. I just don't know much more than that. I have not been privy to any of the advanced screenings or anything. I just know that it is test screening.
Okay, cool. Not to get on a side tangent, but I was actually pretty interested in that.
I like to add. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. All right, so... Oh, and I have one more question. What do you think about the music? Because maybe it's because I've been listening to a lot of royalty-free music, looking for music for my podcast. But I thought the music very much sounded like a couple royalty-free musics kind of.
There was parts where I was like, what? Is this a real score? And then there was times where it had an 80s synth vibe, which was really cool. But it was so few and far between that it just never quite came together. I mean, we've had much better scores for much better 80s type things when it comes to Stranger Things or The Guest or any, you know, just thinking of any of Carpenter's films, like that 80s synth score. That's what they were going for, but it never quite lands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't. I think the motive was just get some music in there to kind of
spice
accompany
it up.
The images rather than tell the story. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause the movie is so cold and it's so like simple to follow that really, I mean, you could almost do the movie without music. I would argue. But that's just my opinion. So, but yeah. So do we have any more final thoughts on The Foreigner?
No.
Okay. All right. So moving on to Noah Baumbach's The Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected.
New and Selected. That's my favorite part of the title. That it really is.
It is. It's necessary, but it's kind of funny that it's just in parentheses.
Right, absolutely.
So, Patrick, what is this movie? Let me ask you, what is this new movie on Netflix?
This is what Netflix should be doing more of, because this is one of the best family dramedies that I've seen in a long time. It follows this group, or this family named the Meyerowitzes, that live in New York, and it's about a very dysfunctional family who clearly has gone through many years of frustration and misunderstandings and pent-up aggression at each other, because the dad was a famous artist who also became a teacher, and he is held to such a high standard by people, and he wanted everyone in his family to be artists, and to him, all his kids outside of his one son have been massive disappointments. And it's got Ben Stiller, Dustin Hoffman, and of all people, Adam Sandler. And of all people who give the best performance in this movie, it's Adam Sandler. This movie is moving, it's sweet, it's earnest, it's heartbreaking at times, and it really just is this really wonderful ball of life in only a way Noah Baumbach can do. And I mean, if you've seen, is it While We're Young, and you know, any of his Francis Ha, like, this guy knows life, he knows people. And this is very much in the wheelhouse of what you expect from him. In a lot of ways, it kind of reminds me of the early, like, 90s Miramax films. And the old, like, Richard Linklater, you know, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset. Just these very intimate portraits of life and people and the things that they go through. And Sandler is so goddamn good in this movie that it pisses me off even more that he's wasting his time doing things like The Ridiculous Six, because this shows that under the right director, he still has talent. Paul Thomas Anderson style talent. And it's there, and it's just being wasted doing comedies that I'm sure that he thinks are just fun to make because he's with his friends and stuff. But I want to see him doing more stuff like this, where he really gets me and like the heartstring, because he's so good. And it, when you see someone with this much talent wasting away in such crappy movies that don't deserve the talent that he actually has, it just breaks my heart and makes me angry. But this movie is truly just wonderful.
This movie truly is wonderful. I have been growing more and more in love with Noah Baumbach, because his movies, especially his recent ones, While We're Young and Mistress America, are, I mean, their movie, Mistress America, is basically a generation of artists where it's about the hardships of being an artist and putting your work out there and having people, you know, basically either love it or deny it or even turn away from you because you're better than them and you're realizing that. And it's, so I have a lot of affection for Mistress America.
Well, and it's funny because a little bit of that comes into this film, but it's more about what happens to the artist when he gets older and the world is moving on from his art.
Right. And that's what I really like about Noam Baumbach is he's kind of been doing this trilogy of artists about artists, like this unannounced trilogy. Because While We're Young is also about Ben Stiller as a documentarian trying right. to legitimately make, you know, art and trying to creatively like make something pure and innocent and good. Problem is, the manufactured, the, you know, hit the heartstrings, all of that stuff is much more sellable, much more digestible than what Stiller is creating.
Right. So, and it's funny because now he's working with a lot of the same actors, obviously, as we just said, Ben Stiller was in While We're Young and now he's here in the Mayowitz stories. And he also brings back Adam Driver for a brief moment as well with Ben Stiller, which is a lot of fun. And they have a great scene together. And Baumbach is ridiculously talented. We don't talk about it enough, I don't think. And it's amazing to me that Netflix landed this. And I'm really hoping this introduces a lot of people to him. Because this movie is so good. It's so great. It's so heartwarming. It's so heartbreaking. It's just so interesting to watch. And again, the performances from Ben Stiller, the performances from Adam Sandler, Dustin Hoffman, Emma Thompson, and then their sister as well, who I can't remember the actress who plays her. And she's so
good. Elizabeth Marvel.
Yes, Elizabeth Marvel. Thank you. And she's so good. And there's this heartbreaking scene where it turns out that she was sexually harassed and sexually assaulted, essentially, by one of their family friends. And there's this moment of like, it was, you know, she was young when it happened. And so now the brothers are trying to figure out how to retaliate against this guy who's 90 years old with dementia. And it's this bittersweet thing, but it gives us this really great moment where these two are bonding for the first time in a long time that I really truly loved. And then the sister being like, why did you do that? Like, I'm already fucked up and this is not going to make it better. And I loved that because it was real. And
it's
just so real and so good. And the way they deal with Dustin Hoffman's character, who, you know, their father, who is much older now, and like the idea that he's getting rid of their childhood home and what that means for them. And, you know, Adam Sandler's character is going through this divorce and oh my God. Like, I can't say enough good things about this movie and how much it means to me and how much I love it. It's in my top 10 right now. It's so good.
It is. It's fantastic. And also this movie's relatable. I mean, there's so many moments in this movie that I was just like, yep, I've been there.
Totally.
And my parents are not like Dustin Hoffman old, or I don't even have grandparents that are like Dustin Hoffman old. But I've had moments with my parents and grandparents where they're like just that stubborn as Dustin Hoffman's character.
Or
like, oh, no.
Or, you know, when they tell you the same story over and over and over again, and you're like, I've heard this. I know this. Why are we talking about it again? You know?
And also, I relate to an extent in that, you know, Adam Sandler's character loves what he does. He loves music and loves making music as like in the same way, you know, I love writing, you know, scripts and doing podcasts and whatnot. But when I get like out in the public sphere and try to like tell people stuff, it's like, it doesn't come out as strong as I hope. He's nervous around people.
Right.
And then, you know, and then of course, you know, Ben Stiller has, you know, daddy issues. I think we all have our you know, disagreements with our father from time to time. And so, I mean, I just relate to all these little things that, you know, there's Matthew and Danny, Adam Sandler's Danny kind of go through.
There's this moment in the movie that I love where the doctors are not sure if Dustin Hoffman is going to make it or not. and they're like, you know, say, what is it? I love you. I forgive you. Goodbye. And that comes into play later in this moment where Sandler really confronts Hoffman towards the end of the film. That is so beautiful and so moving and so freeing all at once, while also being a little bit heartbreaking. And again, enough praise cannot be given to Sandler for this performance, because it's so earnest and that scene is so real. And the way he plays it is just so perfect in the way that Bombeck captures it. And this movie just is truly remarkable. And I want Netflix to do more like this and more like Gerald's Game and these very real films that hadn't been doing a lot of. It seemed like they were picking up a lot of films that, you know, no one else was going to release and they probably would have just gone VOD. Now they're actually getting quality films, because this is the second one in less than a month that was also critically a critical darling, as well as being one that it seems like people are embracing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big deal.
Well, in Netflix, they always try to get great content. I mean, when their first, like, Netflix, I'm doing it in quotations because I don't think they made it in mind. Their first, like, Netflix original movie, Beast of No Nation. And I mean, that was a heavy hitter movie and probably my favorite movie of 2015. Cause it was just, it's a heavy hitter. And, but yeah, I mean, they've been trying, like, for the last couple of years, trying to do a mixture of both, like get some horror films, get some comedies, get some things here and there.
Right.
Get some original content. And, but, you know, they've been really stepping up the game, especially now that, you know, they have a Martin Scorsese movie coming out in a couple of years. And they have, you know, they're like building their catalog of, like, this is what we got and this is what we can offer to filmmakers. I mean, they even gave David Ayer and Max Landis, like, to make a sci-fi cop thriller.
Yeah, I'm still not sure about Bright, but I will give them that they're taking a risk on it, which is great. I just cannot say enough good things about this movie, though. And then what is it, 1922, that's opening or starting next week, I think, on Netflix with Thomas Jane, which is another Stephen King adaptation. And, I mean, this movie, though, was the goods. Like, The Mayowitz Chronicles is the kind of movie that I want to see more of. And I want to see Adam Sandler do more of this.
Like, yeah,
I adore this movie.
And he has the clout at Netflix to do it. I mean, they love his stuff. Yeah, or they love the viewers that are watching his stuff.
Because what? He already re-upped his contract with them, if I remember correctly.
He updated it.
Yeah, so I mean, but and this one, people have to remember, also does not fall into his category of this is one of his Netflix movies. This is a Noah Baumbach film that is on Netflix that he happens to be in. But he is so goddamn good. And Ben Stiller too, man. Ben Stiller, I mean, not that we didn't know Ben Stiller had the talent, because he's been doing a lot more stuff like this recently. But Sandler, it's so few and far between for him to do things like this in Spanglish and Punch Drunk Love, because he's always doing his comedies. So it's just so, it's a huge deal when he does these. And mm-hmm. That's why we're all taking notice, because look how freaking good he is. You know?
He is, and it's, I mean, it is a really compelling performance, primarily because he's playing a person. I mean, he's playing an right. actual character. I mean, or an actual, like, living, not a living person, but he's actually playing a relatable character.
Well, he's human. He's very human.
As human things. I mean, he, you know, he has his daughter and he has his relationship and he doesn't always feel comfortable about the things that she does.
Well, not, I mean, the opening of the movie is him trying to park the car in New York, and that may be one of the best opening scenes I've seen in a movie in a long time, because it's so realistic and so real to a real situation like that and how he plays it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a really nice scene.
It is, and that's this whole movie. And this movie is like a giant vignette in different way. Like, it's because it's, what is it, four very separate vignettes on their time with this family, I think. One for each character until the ending. And so it's just so compelling. And each vignette fits with the last one. Like, it's not different time periods. It's all a continuation, but each one focuses on a certain point of that character's view of this time leading to the finale.
Yeah,
it's just beautiful. It is. It's just beautiful.
It is. It's truly beautiful. I really like this movie a lot. Like, this is, I don't know if I can put it in top 10 yet, because there's so many other great stuff that's come out this year. But I mean, this is going, but I would love to, but I'm really in love with this movie. Like, I was laughing. I was, you know, I didn't cry, but I felt compelled throughout the entire thing, especially during.
I definitely got teary-eyed.
Breakdown. Especially during the breakdown between Stellar and Sandler, like in the third act of the movie.
In outside the art installation.
I mean, that's
about. It's so good. It's so realistic.
Yeah, and they're arguing about things that are actually real or happening. It's not melodramatic. It's something people would argue over. It's something,
and it's fun. First time, obviously, Dustin Hoffman has played Stiller's father, so they already have a real connection and a real camaraderie. So they're fantastic together, but Sandler and Stiller together are really great, and I don't think. Had they ever made a movie together up until this point? I don't think they've ever made a movie together, which is crazy when you think about it, because they are so talented and they're both great comedians. And so it's weird that they've never really worked together before. And I know that someone's going to come out of the woodwork and be like, no, that yo, they did this movie together that you and I probably never heard of or like had seen in one movie.
Well, I mean, the reason why there probably is, we just don't know, is because they came together. Like, they, as actors and comedians, they came up, like, literally at the same time in the 90s. They, like, their popularity started in the 90s.
And so, yet, neither of them that I can think of worked together like this before now.
Yeah, I don't think so.
My God, like, them together, I would watch more stories just about this family with them because they're so good together. And I truly hope for our sake and Sandler's that this is him hearing all this praise. I hope it makes him want to do more movies like this. Because I really want to believe that he can do more performances like this. And I really want to see him do more performances like this, because it's clearly in the realm of possibility.
Yeah. And Adam Sandler has always been a good actor. I think the issue has always been, he's in control of his career.
Correct.
So he's always been on the side of, well, I don't really want to challenge myself with these like movies I do with my friends. I don't want to do so it's like, it really has to be like a really good script or something to like, and a good filmmaker to basically come in and challenge him. And it's something that Adam Sandler has to want because he has the clout now to make whatever he wants.
Because
he has to want it.
And he's done this four times now that I can count, which is Punch Drunk Love, Spanglish, Funny People, and now The Meyerowitz Chronicles. Oh, no. And then was it Men, Women, and Children, the one he did with Jason Reitman? So five.
Well, technically six because of The Cobbler.
Oh, that's true. And I think The Cobbler gets more shit than it deserves. I think he's very good in that movie.
Yeah, I think he. Oh, and Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
So again, we're coming full circle a little bit. They've clearly worked together before. And it's funny because The Cobbler came out, I think, the same year Spotlight did, or like 6 months before. And everyone was like, oh my God, Spotlight's going to be terrible. Like, did you see The Cobbler? And then Spotlight came out and won all the awards. So I think that Sandler clearly has talent. I need him to utilize these more, though.
Yeah, I agree. We need more. Adam, if you're listening to us out there, if you listen to this show at all, listen to us. We want you to do more of this stuff. It's fine if you every now and then want to take a vacation and film it with your friends. That's fine. Look, more of this.
Right. Like, I can't blame you wanting to go and hang out in Hawaii or wherever else with your friends. I get it. But I want him, and I want these kind of movies to be the thing that defines your career post Billy Madison and everything, because this is what his legacy could be if he continues to pick projects like this. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. And it's something that Jim Carrey did on and off as well. And I think that Robin Williams did as well. I would like to see Sandler do more like this.
Yeah, I want to see more of this. Please keep trying. And also let's not forget Ben Stiller, and I'll get to Elizabeth Marvel in a minute, but Ben Stiller, a couple weeks ago I saw Brad Status, the one movie he did with Mike White, and he gives a compelling performance in that movie as well. Like, Stiller is like, for I guess this year, he's just like, I want an Oscar, or won an Oscar nomination. I mean, between this and Brad Status, he is working his ass off, in the acting category.
Right. Absolutely. As he should be, because he has the talent to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Elizabeth Marvel, who I don't think a lot of people know. I recognize her from like some episodes I've seen of her in Law and Order, because she plays like an attorney on that show. But she's fantastic in this movie.
So good. She's so good.
She is.
She's so real. She's so real.
And you brought up the story of her being sexually harassed. And the scene where she describes it.
Is it assaulted or is it harassed? I legitimately am having it. Because it's almost like she was sexually assaulted, really. In a way, and that's why I'm leaning towards sexual assault because of the event.
I think for the purposes of this podcast, we'll say assaulted, because because that sounds a little bit more right. It's
right.
It gets that's fuzzy in my brain. Like, I mean, you can have a debate on which it is, but I think for the purpose of this podcast, we'll say assaulted.
Yes, I think that's what we'll go with.
And the way she tells that story, I mean, it feels real. It's not like, Lifetime heavy drama, shaking camera, cuts and flashbacks. It's like stationary camera, and we're just like hearing her talk about the story.
Yeah, she just recants the story.
Yeah.
That's all it is. But it's beautifully done.
Because it's like they're apologetic. They're sorry for it.
Well, and the way that it all plays out too is because this guy shows up at the hospital to see their dad, and it like they're both Ben Stiller and Adam Sandler's characters are going, "Oh, well, we always liked him. He was such a good guy." And then you see the sister is no longer standing there, and they're like, "Wait, what's going on?" And she's running out of the parking lot.
Yeah,
and you're like,
she's repulsed by him.
Yeah, and that's when you realize, oh my God, this is what happened.
Yeah, so, and even worse, like, her father didn't do anything about it.
Right. And so it's just this really beautiful, bittersweet, heartbreaking moment, but I truly adore it.
This is a really strong movie, and I think relatable on all four quadrants, because I relate to it all. There's one thing in this movie that I don't really care for, and that is the student films the character makes, or the
I thought that was a weird choice, but I understand at the same time.
I mean, I get the typical, stereotypical film student is like they make weird experimental abstract stories. But I can tell you, as someone who not only is a film student, but also went to a festival this year that was primarily for showcasing student films. Most student films are actually nothing like that.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, there is absolutely, so far in my from what I've seen, there's absolutely like no nudity in any of the student films I've you know worked on or have seen or that have been made at my school. So I don't know where that's a weird choice on Bombeck's part, but other than that, this movie's perfect.
Yeah, I can definitely go with that. I thought that was a odd thing as well. But man, this movie is just so fantastic. It's, like I said, for me, it's one of the best movies of the year. It's just so, so fantastically made and just so real and so honest. And it's a beautiful movie, and I really hope people see it.
Yeah, please check it out. It is a fantastic movie and so worth checking out. And it's on Netflix. I mean, that's the easiest. I mean, that's so easy to, you don't have to even spend money unless you have to get a Netflix subscription. Then yeah, you have to spend some money, but still you don't have, if you have Netflix, just watch it on there.
Oh, totally. And here's the thing again, I know that a lot of the Netflix movies are not the most beloved. I know that they are not always met with the strongest reactions. This is their best movie. I think that they've released since Beast of No Nation. I highly recommend it. I highly recommend watching it. Do not be scared by the fact that it's a Netflix film. It's fantastic, and you need to see it. The performances are just outstanding, and if you really wanted to believe that Adam Sandler can still do good, watch this movie.
I agree. Please check it out. Netflix is trying. I mean, like every movie studio, their content will vary in quality. Gotta get past is they're just a typical movie studio as well, where their content will always vary, but this is one of the better ones. This is one of their best ones, so please check it out. All right, so do we have any more thoughts on Meyerowitz stories, new and selected?
Just watch the movie. Like I said, just watch the movie. I mean, that's all I can keep saying. Just watch the movie. It is just a really magnificent piece, and mic drop. That's that.
Yep. All right. So with that, I think we're done with the podcast this week. So with that said, Patrick, where can the good people find you?
The good people, if you so choose. So follow me on Twitter at PJ_Campbell. You can find me at Patrick Campbell (PJ) on Facebook. You can find my writing at SoCalThrills.com or Wizard Magazine. So wizardworld.com/wizard. I am one of the writers for the new Wizard Magazine, which is a lot of fun. I never thought that I'd ever write for Wizard Magazine. So it's a pretty big deal, and I really enjoy it. You can also find me at my podcast, Real Film Chatter, REEL Film Chatter, where we talk all the things going on in the world of movies. And you guys can look forward to a great podcast about Thor Ragnarok with myself and Diego Crespo, the Waffle Man, very, very soon, because the embargo for the film lifts on the 19th, which is exactly 4 days from now. That's really sneaking up on us, so that's great. So I cannot wait to talk about that with everyone. And again, Kale, thank you for having me. This has been a blast. This is a great way for me to spend my afternoon driving home in traffic from work.
And now I'm super jealous because you saw Thor Ragnarok before me.
I'm sorry that my critic screening was as early as it was. No, I'm not.
I'm just joking.
I'm not sorry.
I'm glad you got to see it. I'm glad you got to see it early, and I'm glad you, and I can take a little pride that you had to wait a few hours to watch the Star Wars trailer.
Yeah, you keep rubbing it in, you son of a bitch.
I will keep rubbing it in. I have to. I got to get something on you. Yeah. But yeah, I cannot wait for that review, and please check out all of Patrick's stuff. And I will have links in the description to wizardworld.com. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Wizardworld.com/wizard for Wizard Magazine.
And Real Film Chatter. And did you mention SoCal Thrills?
I did. And that's where you can get my reviews.
All right, I'll put links in those description below. Check them out. Patrick, thank you for being on the show. All right, and you can find me at MovieKale on Twitter. You can also follow the show on at The Youth Critic, and you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Please leave a like or a comment or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes if you want to hear more. Thank you all so much for being – thank you for listening this week. We will be back as Geostorm and the Snowman and maybe something else. Maybe there's something else on Netflix that comes out soon. We'll think of something. But, yeah, not some good movies coming out next week. But not looking good so far.
Yeah, and don't come at me and talk shit.
All right.
About me seeing Thor Ragnarok like some people and then rubbing in that you saw the Star Wars trailer before me, sons of bitches.
Like I said, I have to hold you over something. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you next time.
The Senate committee will now hear from Jacob Lawson, Climate ISS Chief Coordinator. May the record reflect that he was nearly 1 hour late.
Yeah, sorry about that. I literally had to fly in from outer space.
Thanks to a system of satellites, natural disasters have become a thing of the past. We can control our weather.
Mr. President. One of our thermospheric satellites malfunctioned over Afghanistan.
So your proposal is what?
We shut down all satellites.
I don't need to remind all of you how many people died from catastrophic climate conditions.
Make sure there's no further incidents.
Are you going back up to space?
But I'm coming back. I promise.
Have a safe trip, sir.
Just don't touch anything.
Main engine start.